Inspiring solutions to save America, one show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
They believe that they can destroy this bond that exists between you and Trump if they somehow make Trump look bad, make Trump look like a reprobate, embarrass you about Trump. They can't do it because you came before Trump. Desperately want Trump gone, and I know that they desperately want it codified that Trump cannot run again, because make no mistake, they remain scared to death of you, and they remain scared to death of Trump. Trump, 75 million, 80 million votes, and I'm going to tell you, you're not going anywhere. Even if Trump does, you're not. Which I think remains one of our big campaign strengths going forward. They can't separate you from Trump. And more importantly, they can't separate you from the ideas. They can't separate you from MAGA. They can't separate you from Make America Great Again.
From sea to shining sea, 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Welcome back, my friends. Hour number two of the Wendy Bell Radio Program on the clock. Remember to get the app Wendy Bell Radio Network. You can join along on the live video stream. Join in on the chat and the Wendy Bell Radio podcast. Easy to get. Just plug in our name, download us onto your device, and then you will have my voice wherever you go. Brock seeming very afraid of that. You know, I will admit to you in this segment, this is a really... I have very weird views about this. Not weird views. I have very strong feelings watching Catherine Herridge be the Elon Musk to technology and to social media, to journalism, because that's what she is. She is a talented and dogged, trusted journalist. And in a world of shrinking violets and corruption and propaganda and mills of bad information, she's really been the light, that shining light on the hill. It gives you faith that it's not all lost. And then CBS kicked her out, fired her, seized her computers, took all of her materials, all of her documents, and locked her out of the building. Now, she didn't murder anybody. She didn't steal company secrets. She wasn't writing lies. She was getting too close to the truth. She had dug into the Hunter Biden laptop story. She was working with other whistleblowers on government corruption, and she became too much of a liability, and lo and behold, CBS News cuts her off at the knees, and they fired her. Now, she appeared before a House committee yesterday, and she's talking about something called the Press Act. And this Press Act, I've printed it out. It's one page, and I'll tell you after she speaks. I want to play you her entire opening statement. It's 5 minutes and 33 seconds. It's everything you need to know about death to America, because if you can silence the will of the people, the voices of the people, the votes of the people, and you can create a homogenized clone trooper army of journalists, then there is no more honesty. There is no more truth. There is no more freedom. And it dies on this hill. I want you to hear Catherine Herridge addressing that committee yesterday. Go.
As you know, in February, I was held in contempt of court for refusing to disclose my confidential sources on a national security story. I think my current situation can help put the importance of the Press Act into context. One of our children recently asked me if I would go to jail, if we would lose our house, and if we would lose our family savings to protect my reporting sources. I wanted to answer that in this United States, where we say we value democracy and the role of a vibrant and free press, that it was impossible, but I could not offer that assurance. The Bipartisan Press Act, which came out of this House committee, would put an end to the sort of legal jeopardy that I have experienced firsthand in the federal courts. And without the legislation, more journalists will run the uncertainty of the contempt gauntlet in the future. This legislation will provide protections for every working journalist in the United States, now and for the next generation. The legislation provides strong protections at the federal level for reporters and their sources. It would block litigants and federal government from prying into a reporter's files, except when there's an imminent threat of violence, including terrorism and in defamation cases. At the state level, similar rules are already in place to protect press freedom. It is my sincere hope that the passage of the Press Act will provide similar protections at the federal level. I hope that I am the last journalist who has to spend 2 years in the federal courts fighting to protect my confidential sources. My current situation arises from a Privacy Act lawsuit. I am only a witness in the case. It is not common for these cases to reach the stage of holding a reporter in contempt, but when such cases happen, they have profound consequences, impacting every journalist in the United States. Forcing a reporter to disclose confidential sources would have a crippling effect on investigative journalism, because without reliable assurances of confidentiality, sources will not come forward. The First Amendment provides protections for the press because an informed electorate is at the foundation of our democracy. If confidential forces are not protected, I fear investigative journalism is dead. Each day, I feel the weight of that responsibility. As you know, I was held in contempt of court for upholding the basic journalistic principle of maintaining the pledge of confidentiality to my sources. I have complete respect for the federal court and the judicial process, and I'm not here to litigate the case. It will play out before the appellate court in Washington, D.C. But the fact that I have been fighting in the courts for 2 years and that I am now facing potentially crippling fines of $800 a day to protect my reporting sources underscores the vital importance of the Press Act. When you go through major life events, as I have in recent weeks, losing your job, losing your company health insurance, having your reporting files seized by your former employer, and being held in contempt of court gives you clarity. The First Amendment, the protection of confidential sources, and a free press are my guiding principles. They are my North Star. When I was laid off in February, an incident reinforced in my mind the importance of protecting confidential sources. CBS News locked me out of the building and seized hundreds of pages of my reporting files, including confidential source information. Multiple sources said they were concerned that by working with me to expose government corruption and misconduct, they would be identified and exposed. I pushed back, and with the public support of my union, SAG-AFTRA, the records were returned. CBS's News' decision to seize my reporting records crossed a red line that I believe should never be crossed again by any media organization in the future. The litigation and being held in contempt have taken a toll on me and my career. This is not a battle you can fight alone. I am grateful for the support of fellow journalists and multiple First Amendment organizations, including the Reporters Committee for Press Freedom, the Freedom of the Press Foundation, the Coalition for Women in Journalism, the Knight First Amendment Institute, the Society of Professional Journalists, as well as the Columbia Journalism School, of which I am a graduate. I have also been fortunate to have the support from my former employer as I continue to fight this case. Not many journalists could count on a former employer, in this case Fox News, to support a costly and vigorous defense of the First Amendment. That is why the Press Act comes at the right time when independent journalism and news platforms are expanding opportunities for reporting diverse voices that strengthen our democracy. I know I join many journalists who are encouraged by the recent comments of the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who said he hopes to have the legislation through the Senate and on the president's desk this year. I deeply appreciate the committee's commitment to this legislation and holding this public hearing. Thank you.
Journalistic rape. That is what she accuses CBS News of doing. Journalistic rape. $800 a day. The potential daily fine for her not telling her confidential source names. Do you see how we're being squeezed? The knocks on the door from federal agents who want to discuss what you've written on your social media. The punitive forces against people who dare to seek the truth. It's not just Catherine Herridge. It's James O'Keefe. It's Alex Jones. It's Donald Trump. And what do we know about the actions of the left to silence those of us who believe in freedom? They will stop at nothing, and they will financially bankrupt you. They will do whatever they can to leave you in tatters, to bog you down in a quagmire of charges and litigation and defense, which is unaffordable to the average American citizen, using the weight of the taxpayer-funded federal government to go after people who dare ask questions. When we come back, I want to tell you about this press act. And we also have to say something about these colleges and universities. Two-thirds of them require this of their students to graduate. Do you know what it is? Because it's totally jacked. Next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. So she is there. Catherine Herridge is sitting before a House subcommittee, as is Cheryl Atkinson and others. And they're talking specifically about this Protect Reporters from Excessive State Suppression Act. Isn't that remarkable that we need something on the books that says you're not allowed to infringe on our freedom of the press because it has become so pervasive. It's become so ubiquitous. We've learned how to deal with it. It's like how I learned to walk with a limp after I had foot surgery, right? You learn how to walk around it. You learn how to just become new normal. Every step hurts, yes, and I'm limping, yes, but I've worked around it until, of course, I broke a bone in my foot. And then I was doubly screwed. We don't want to get to that position. So what is this press act? It defines a covered journalist as somebody who gathers, prepares, collects, photographs, records, writes, edits, reports, or publishes news or information that concerns news events or other matters of public interest for dissemination to the public. Doesn't say that you got to work for a legacy news outlet, because what do we know? We've created an alternate economy, another world where people can go and get alternate content that isn't prescribed by some news boss. There is no corporate conglomerate that can control everybody. This act is saying we identify these players in the dissemination of news, and they need to be unfettered. They cannot be restricted by the state, by the federal government, or anybody else. And it requires that the federal government provide journalists the opportunity to respond to demands for records, information, or other communications from journalists. You can't just say, I need this now or else you're fired, because that's not how this works. And finally, it extends those compelled disclosure standards and exemptions to include email, telephone, and third-party providers holding data that could reveal a journalist's source. They've got to put it in writing that you can't be a disgusting scumbag and circumvent our First Amendment rights just so you can figure out who's blowing the whistle on you because you're butthurt that we're on to you sucking. That's what this is, right? See, they need to call me. I'm telling you. So I told you before the break, what do you think it is? Two-thirds of U.S. colleges and universities require this of their students to graduate. Get it? Yeah, of course you do. DEI classes. We've got to now browbeat our students with some class that says everybody's different, deal with it, and move on. And then you get a credit for that. Here's your story from the New York Post. 2/3 of U.S. colleges and universities require DEI classes to graduate. So says this report. Most American colleges and universities require the completion of courses that emphasize diversity, equity, and inclusion-related topics to graduate, which we already know from listening to the Black voters earlier. They don't even know what DEI stands for. So what are we doing? Speech First, which is a group advocating the First Amendment rights on U.S. campuses, released an investigation Thursday. So this is hours old. That found 165 of 248 selected institutions from American University to Williams College mandate these DEI-related classes to meet general education requirements. The classes place students into identity groupings based on racial, social, sexual, and political characteristics to create some rigid framework among the students where they only see each other as either the oppressor or as the oppressed. I'm so tired of people telling me that I'm blinded by my white privilege. It's just so damn oppressive. Really? Really? This is going to tick off and tarnish this generation of students. You know what they want to know? They want to know about what do we do when we have to pay taxes? How does that work? Can we get some basic economics going on here rather than trying to brainwash us with all of this racial justice crap? Can we please talk about things that matter? Can we take a class and instead can we have a class on entrepreneurialism? Having an idea and growing your idea into a brand, monetizing your brand, creating your own lane, carving out a niche, doing something that nobody else has done. Why don't we open the windows and let people soar instead of boxing them in and caging them into these stupid categories and then browbeating with them in school? I know where we live in Pittsburgh, the University of Pittsburgh, which is, you know, the lady dancers or whatever cheerleaders and the leotards. It says, you know, Black Lives Matter or whatever on it. Inclusion. Stop it. Stop forcing it. People know the difference between right and wrong. The ebb and flow of human nature settles the score. Enough meddlesome woke Democrats trying to ruin everything. And put the final stake in higher education, because that's what they're doing. Quick time out. When we return on the Wendy Bell Radio program, let's talk about this great debate. Donald Trump says, look, I got to debate Joe. Let's do it now. Let's get him in. Let's do it early. Let's do it often. Joe Biden's response. I'll get it for you next on the Wendy Bell Radio program. Welcome back to the Wendy Bell Radio program. You know, we were just talking off the air about this whole changing in the new normal, right? And I'm not down with this new normal. I don't think that we should have 2 months of early voting leading up to an election. There's no need for that. We're not busy for 2 whole months to need that much help for the Democrats or whomever wants to cheat. And there are Republicans too, dirtbags, right? To figure out what the margin is that they need on election day in person in order to make it happen. Right? It's election day. We don't need to vote by mail. We don't need to vote by ballot drop box. We don't need Zuckerbucks. We don't need help from people. We know how to do this. We need to get back to doing what we need to do. This is a very interesting strategy by Donald Trump. Now, he just came out and said it. Hey, we have the sound, so let's play what Donald Trump said, and then I'll give you the backstory because it makes perfect sense, and I agree with him. Here's Donald Trump.
It's time for Crooked Joe Biden, the worst president in the history of the United States, and I to debate. We have to talk about what he's doing and where we're going. We owe it to our country. We owe it to all Americans. Anytime, anywhere, any place.
Simple. Worst president in the United States. We need to talk about what he's been doing. What are you doing? Because it's all a disaster. And that's just not a coincidence, clearly. The frustration for those of us who in 2020, 2016, all of these elections are like, you realize that allowing a Democrat in has consequences, and it almost immediately means you have less money in your bank account. At the most base level, the taxes immediately go out of control. The grifts, the money laundering operations, in which Republicans play a key role, we should add, if we're just being honest. Trump says, look, we need a debate. We need a debate early. We don't need this to happen the same way the John Fetterman thing happened, where Pennsylvanians had like 6 weeks of early voting before the debate, before they realized after they've already cast their vote for the guy that, oh my God, yeah, he did have a stroke and he can't communicate, considering the first words out of his mouth were hello and good night, right? So this is what Donald Trump wants. It's from the post-millennial. Trump campaign demands earlier and more frequent debates with Joe Biden. I really, really doubt that Joe Biden's going to debate at all. I do not think that he's able. I almost had Brock snag this video for you, which the audio would have done on the radio, but it was so telling. It's Joe Biden walking out of a business recently, and he looks handicapped. He's holding his hand in a fashion as though his body is curling in on itself. He's walking more robotically, the shuffle, worried about, you know, every move which could topple him. He's not going to make it to the finish line. Donald Trump says, let's make it happen now. Trump campaign calling for earlier and more frequent debates against Joe Biden as the November election inches closer. In a letter from co-campaign managers Susie Wiles and Chris LaCivita, obtained by various news organizations, they told the Commission on Presidential Debates co-chairs that they were writing in agreement with the pending letter from television networks advocating for presidential debates to occur in 2024. Of course there should be presidential debates. This is what we do. This is how America can see. These are your options. Listen to how these two candidates, or three as the case should be, because RFK Jr. should be a part of it as well. Listen to how these candidates manage questions from regular people and those from the left-wing media hacks who are always in the position to moderate. They note, while voting is beginning earlier and earlier, and as we saw in 2020, tens of millions of Americans had already voted by the time there was the first debate. That has to stop. Even Raphael Warnock. Now, this is interesting. This guy is dirty as you know what, right? We followed this cat when he was up for election. We followed the story, the money, all of it, from the apartment complex, the religious this and that, all of it. Even Raphael Warnock thinks, you know what? I think it's a good idea. Americans have to see these debates. I'm not so sure the Biden administration was ready for this. Listen.
Should there be a debate between these two candidates?
Oh, I think one of the great characteristics of a democracy is that you get to see contrast. That's what elections are about. They are about a choice. And I think that you will, look, I'm not in the Biden campaign. I'm not a member of the campaign, but I think you will hear a debate. And I certainly would like to hear one.
I agree, Raphael. I agree. It is the way it is done, but they will not do it. I would be very, very surprised if Joe Biden ever, ever set foot on a stage to go one-on-one, because it would be done. It would be done in the first 10 minutes. And they know that. There's not enough juice to get into that body. Now, I want to give you an update on something else that we are following. So this impeachment idea regarding Alejandro Mayorkas. In my mind, as we inch ever closer to the end, God willing, of this administration? Are we really going to remove Alejandro Mayorkas from the position he's currently in as the Department of Homeland Security secretary with any actual time to make any change? No. But the point is, having a trial in the United States Senate, which is the law, and hearing evidence, presenting evidence that shows without a shadow of a doubt that all of these open borders calamities have been planned, purposeful, premeditated, calculated, and scripted. That's what you need to know. This headline from Washington Examiner. This is encouraging. 43 Senate Republicans demand Schumer hold full Mayorkas impeachment trial. You've got a regularly sleeping upper chamber of Republicans. These are not trailblazers by and large, save for your Mike Lees and your Ted Cruz's. You've got these Susan Collins, Mitt Romney, what's her face, Lisa Murkowski contingent of Republicans suck. And isn't it amazing that those are the three of the six who did not join with their 43 colleagues in demanding Chuck Schumer not table these articles of impeachment, which are going to be coming from the House? We understand will be delivered by Speaker Mike Johnson Tuesday, maybe Wednesday. This is interesting, though. Nearly the entire Republican conference is calling on Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer to ensure a full impeachment trial is held for Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas as the House prepares to transmit these articles of impeachment over to the Senate next week. In a letter sent to Schumer, 43 GOP senators led by Lindsey Graham urged the Senate to, quote, uphold its constitutional responsibility to properly adjudicate the House of Representatives' impeachment of Department of Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas. Look, they want to change and make everything a new normal. They want you to believe the new normal is the FBI knocking on your door and asking you about your Instagram or your TikToks or your Facebook posts. They want you to believe that the new normal is, in the United States, journalists who actually ask questions and do digging and protect their sources, who are whistleblowers, who demand such anonymity, whose allegations will be held up for rebuke, but who demand anonymity to keep the system going. Those reporters are demonized, vilified, and canceled, right? They want this new normal that we don't need to have debates, that we shouldn't have to talk about stuff, that if we tell you this is how it needs to go, this is how it needs to go, conversation over. That's not a constitutional republic. That is a totalitarian regime. That is what we have. It's not what's coming. It's not what's coming down the pike. It's not like, oh my gosh, look at those storm clouds. Friends, we're in a swirling freaking storm. I want you to hear this quick conversation, all right? And by the way, the three holdouts, three senators did not sign this letter because they were not present. And I don't know why. Rand Paul was one of them. But the three Republican senators who did not sign on with their colleagues to force Chuck Schumer to do constitutionally what is required of the United States Senate, and that's to hear the articles of impeachment in a full Senate trial. The three senators, of course, who did not sign that, Mitt Romney, who sucks and always has, Lisa Murkowski, who sucks worse, and same with Susan Collins. Is anybody surprised? Can these states, can Utah, Maine, and Alaska, can you do better? Just once. Do better. Do better. Listen to this. Elise Stefanik with Chris Ray, FBI. She's asking him, Mr. Ray, I know what we've been talking about, this special counsel Robert Hur sitting down and doing this interview with Joe Biden about classified documents. And we know that Hur has said, you know what? We don't think that he's going to get prosecuted because jurors will see him sympathetically because he's old and demented. Listen to this. Go.
Director Ray, have you read Robert Hur's special counsel report?
I have reviewed it.
Do you believe Joe Biden mishandled classified information?
I'm not going to discuss the report. That's the special counsel's report, and I've referred
it. In your opinion as director of the FBI, do you believe he mishandled classified information?
Again, I'm just going to refer to the report, and the special counsel can speak for himself on his report.
Are you aware, and this is breaking news right now, are you aware that there's an audio recording of Joe Biden saying to his ghostwriter in February of 2016, quote, I just found all the classified stuff downstairs, end quote. Are you aware of that audio recording?
I would just respectfully refer you to the special counsel.
No, I'm asking you, are you aware as director of the FBI? You're either aware or you're not.
Am I aware of what now?
Whether the audio exists of Joe Biden saying in February 2017, quote, I just found all the classified stuff downstairs, end quote, to his ghostwriter.
Again, I'm just going to refer to the special counsel and his testimony and his report.
It sounds like you might be aware of it then.
There are audio recordings. They weren't erased by the ghostwriter of Joe Biden saying in 2016, I just found all a box of classified documents in the basement. Don't you think we should probably know about that? It shows willingness. It shows knowledge. It shows a lot of things. He's the president of the United States, and that's the director of the FBI, legitimately, purposefully stonewalling and refusing to answer. And you pay for that. We demand better facts. Quick timeout on the Wendy Bell Radio program. This is awesome. When a gun control grifter gets totally wrecked by a Chinese immigrant. Oh, well, stay where you are. We're back in minutes on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. You know, it's always nice when a grifter gets called out on open mic night. This is why they don't want Joe Biden to debate. See, when you're a grifter, and the entire business that you're grifting is based on fraud, BS, and assorted fear-mongering, and your name is David Hogg, and you want to go out and you want to hit all of these cities on some, like, TED Talk tour for rejects, because that's what he is. This guy is made and used and abused. He's being investigated, apparently. He's accused of misusing donations for candidate political action committee he created, right? He's like, we need to get more candidates who represent our liberal suck woke values that are all against guns. And we're going to create this political action committee, and you give us your money, and we'll put it towards people who fit that bill. Well, he got $3 million, and where'd it go? Where'd it go? Well, I can't answer that question right away, but that is curious. But I can tell you, he did get destroyed as a woman at a conversation, some meeting, some demonstration he's doing, takes the mic, and she's like, yeah, you know, I come from a culture that's different than yours, and it's called communism. And in the world of communism, you don't have a gun because the government knows they can't control you when you can shoot at them. And so it's like item number one, make sure that everybody who we are controlling is without firearms. So this is the open mic drop of gun control grifter David Hogg that you are going to enjoy forever, okay? You're welcome. Go.
Hi, my name is Lily Tang Williams. Welcome to my live free or die state. Actually, I am a Chinese immigrant who survived communism. And under Mao, you know, 40 million people were starving to death after he sold communism to them. And 20 million people died, murdered during his Cultural Revolution. So my question to you, David, is that can you guarantee me a gun owner tonight? Our government in the U.S., in D.C., will never, never become a tyrannical government. Can you guarantee that to me?
There's no way I can ever guarantee that any government will not be tyrannical.
Well, then the debate on gun control is over because I will never give up my guns. Never, never. And you should go to China to see how gun control works for dictatorship of CCP.
100%. Can you guarantee me that this government, which, by the way, is already tyrannical, and I'm pretty sure she knew this, is not going to become tyrannical? I can't guarantee you that. Well, then this debate is over. Because until you can, out of my cold, dead hands, will you get my guns? It is the last line of defense. And one of the things I love about this woman She has no notes. She's got nothing scripted. She gets up and she knows exactly where she's coming from. She knows exactly where she's leading him to slaughter. And she summarily takes the reins and brings him along for the ride. Then this debate is over. All of these grifts, every single initiative, it seems, every activist who's out there with a bullhorn, who's trying to gin up some favorability for some cause that you and I are supposed to care about, almost all of them end up being money laundering operations that do nothing to benefit anybody and allow a precious few to get rich and stay in position to remain corrupt. Think about what we told you yesterday. We talked about how, what percentage of homelessness has been remediated in California with a $24 billion price tag over the last several years. California taxpayers every single year pay gobs of money under the guise of getting homeless people off the street. And it's created no plans to get the homeless off the street. Where'd the money go? Where'd the money in Ukraine go? Where did all of the COVID money go? Where's the COVID money that hasn't been spent? Why isn't that put back in a giant coffer so that we can tick down at that national debt that they keep cranking back up? That's the grift. Dial in on somebody's emotion. Create some kind of a plan that's not going to change anything. But in the moment when people are really hot and bothered by it, right? They might cough in a few bucks to you and then cash in on the grift, go do whatever you do and be a ne'er-do-well. It's your United States government. It's everything they do. And this hog guy, accused of misusing donations for a candidate PAC he created, where did it go? The group spent only about $263,000 of the $3 million it raised towards helping candidates who are pro-gun control be elected. Where did all the Black Lives Matter money go? What about all of the organizations out there? What about Target? What about Levi's? What about your major brands that fell on the woke altar, professing their love for all things equitable and inclusive, and pledge tens of millions of even hundreds of millions of dollars to a fictitious idea that money is going to change racism, or that racism is a problem that needs money thrown at it? It's all predicated on a grift. And the grifters are counting their cash on a desert island somewhere, looking at their yacht docked offshore. There you go. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, hour number three, holy moly, we're live with our national security expert, John Guandolo. Look, what's going on in Dearborn, Michigan, this Sharia law, if you even see it, like even a speck of it, it is rampant. John Guandolo with a huge, huge warning at the nexus of this death to America idea. So dangerous. Next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network.